Welcome back to the Saturday Splash with Maddie and Lynn, and today, Andrew Padula from Padula's Plants.
Hello, Andrew.
How you doing?
Great. We're talking about natives. Andrew is the king of all things native plants, and we just love having him on here. So before the break, I asked about cockroach control. He recommended Pennyroyal. So we were talking over the break, and turns out Pennyroyal is great for pest control, keeping pests at bay. So when you grow it and you take the leaves and dry the leaves and put them around the windowsills, around the door entrances, things like that. But it's also good as a ground cover.
It's the way that Pennyroyal grows. You know, some other mints do this as well, like some bee balms and oreganos. And, you know, ajuga is in the mint family, and ajuga being a native evergreen to the area here works well for erosion control. But the way that Pennyroyal grows is kind of two phases. It'll grow as a ground cover style through part of the year, and then as it enters into its flowering stage, get a little taller, a foot and a half to 2 feet tall. Major pollinator attractor. Like, it's just the insects, you can walk by it, and wasps, you know, all sorts of native bees love it. Not so many butterflies. It's more around the hoverflies and bee end of it, and wasps that come to pollinate it.
Okay. Oh, so, all right. Good for pollinators. Good to keep pests out. Good as ground cover. And ground cover, of course, you know, if you've got lots of ground cover, it keeps the soil cooler, keeps it shaded, keeps some moisture in. So really good to have ground cover in your garden and just all over your yard.
And so we're talking erosion.
We are.
And why is erosion bad, Maddie? We should probably talk about that. I mean, yes, we can control erosion with plants and with native plants, which is great. But why do we need to control erosion? Why is it bad?
Because it looks ugly.
It does look
ugly.
That's
what it's all about. No, there's way more to nature than what it looks like. You know, if you have these bare patches of soil, I mean, we've all seen, okay, think about when you've been down to the Reedy River after a big rainstorm and the river is bright orange and you're asking yourself, why is the river bright orange?
Because of Oompa Loompas.
Erosion.
Oh.
Erosion.
Yeah.
Yeah, erosion.
It does look like the Willy Wonka chocolate river sometimes. It looks,
yeah,
it's so brown.
It's pretty gross. Yeah, all that dirt. And let me just go ahead and tell you guys, there is a difference between dirt and soil, and we environmentalists take it very personally. Soil is nutritious, healthy, and it's in place on the ground. Dirt is useless and it's nutrient free. It's dry. It's misplaced soil. So anyway, don't you be talking about dirt when you mean soil, because some people are sensitive like me.
And soil has plants growing in it.
Yes. And dirt does not.
Dirt's like dirt. That stuff on the side of the road that makes your feet all black and gross.
Yes. Blah. So anyway, when we're talking about erosion, we're talking about dirt getting washed away into the river. And I don't know if you guys are fish or not, but fish breathe with their gills, right?
Yeah.
They breathe water with their gills. They do not breathe dirt well with their gills.
Especially clay, since it's such a fine particulate.
That's right. They clog them. They suffocate. It's not good. It also takes away the clarity of the water. So aquatic plants, just like terrestrial plants, use the sun to photosynthesize. Well, if you're an aquatic plant and the sun's rays can't reach you because there's too much dirt in the water, you will not grow. You will die. You will not be able to help the water. You will not be able to help the wildlife that depend on it. So, yes, erosion, not good. It's actually sediment. A lot of scientists consider sediment to be the worst water pollutant.
And that's it's very harmful. It's measured. And fun fact for all of those of you who are not environmentalists, sediment is measured. It's called turbidity, which I did not know when I started this. And people started talking about turbidity and how bad it was. And I said, what is that?
Water clarity.
Yeah.
How far down can you see?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good. All right. So let's talk about plants and their roots and how they help erosion.
Well, there's quite a few different styles of plant roots that help with erosion control. You know, when you're dealing with erosion in general, it's always a good idea to go with plants that have more of a fine netting style root system.
Easier for the little teeny roots to get down in that soil?
It is easier, but what it also does is those tiny roots, they hold more of the finer pieces of soil in place. So less is, you know, it's less likely to wash away if there's a whole bunch of fine netting holding it together rather than one thick taproot that the soil can wash around.
Makes sense. And that, clay is so fine too.
Right. And that's why mint in general, depending, and there's so many beautiful kinds of mint. I mean, I could just go on and on mint all day. It's one of my favorite plants. Only, you know, I'm a big tea drinker, so I use a lot of different kinds of mints, rosemaries, you name it. But, you know, there's all sorts of mints, and they all have a fine netting type of root, and which makes them great for erosion control, and it's a useful plant many times. So it has double duty and its benefits.
I love that.
You know, and that's really nice. So what I wouldn't use for erosion control are plants like daylily or iris or liriope, because those have more of, you know, just the daylily, more tuberous style rooting that is thick and singular. And it's sure, it may hold the soil in place directly where the plant's growing, but since it doesn't have that fine netting style rooting to it, the soil is going to wash around those roots much easier. And eventually it'll be the decline of the plant. And the soil's gone.
And you said about mint. The other thing that I've heard about mint, I haven't grown any, but I've heard that it grows and multiplies very quickly. So that seems like it would be a good thing, right?
It is. And that when you're dealing with erosion, time is of the essence. You don't want to plant something that's going to take years to establish.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
when you're dealing with an erosion spot, if you can get it filled up and fixed within a month to 2 months, that's great. And that's how mint grows, you know, like peppermint grows like grease lightning. Like, I wouldn't be surprised at all. Some varieties of peppermint can cover 6 to 8 feet a season.
Wow.
And then I bet your yard smells really good, too.
And it does. You can mow it. You can, you know, it's great for pollinator, you know, insects to come to.
Mm-hmm. How tall does that get?
Most peppermint's around the 2-2.5 foot mark.
Okay. Okay. You know. And can you just, if you want to keep it short.
Sure.
I mean, they have other, lawn, you can
they have other
too.
Varieties, you know,
oh, cool.
but like bee balm, which is a native mint, you know, wild bergamot and the Monardas get around 4 feet. So that's a larger mint.
And so when we were talking earlier about like the hill that I have in my house, do you want to have a different plant? Like if you're on a hill or if you have erosion on a flat stretch, what's the best for that?
A good idea is the steeper the hill, the lower growing plant you want. Like for instance, I wouldn't, because of the speed that the water is going to go down the hill, I wouldn't want to put a tall plant on that hill because it's likely going to get washed over. So I would want to put a low growing ground cover on that steep hill where the water can go over it quickly and not have a big effect on it.
Makes sense. And yeah. Diversity is good too. You don't want just one kind of ground cover. You want really as much as you can get.
You want a nice mix because, you know, one ground cover is nice if it grows carpet effect style and does a complete full job of growing so dense it keeps weeds out and keeps the soil together. But having a multitude of different kinds of plants for erosion control will slow the water down even more because that water's got to hit this plant and that kind of plant and this kind of plant, and it's going to not go over and through it so quickly.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's really great for filtering the water too. I mean, plants are nature's filters. They if you've got, you know, pollutant in your yard, then plants, their roots in particular, are really, really good at pulling pollutants out of the water.
Yes.
It seems too, like, you know, if you had a bunch of different kinds of plants that they would flower at different times and stuff like that. And so that would, you know, be even better too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right.
That would be really good. I was at a consultation at a neighborhood in Greenville, you know, at a community, and we were actually talking about some swales and some erosion, you know, issues going on there. And at the end of the swale, we were talking about having some rain, you know, slash catch gardens to catch the water, because one common misconception is that you have a stone swale and it exits out into nothing. And then really you're not doing anything except channeling the water to somewhere else. You know, if you're going to have a swale design, it's always a good idea to have a catch garden at the end of it. Something that with a variety of plants, it's going to get that water, water loving plants, you know, lobelias, mints, anything that really loves to have wet feet, and slow that water down and absorb it before it has a chance to do its erosion.
That's another thing about erosion is that there, with no plant life, there's nothing to slow the water. So you get, you know, you get flooding too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Cool. And we don't like floods.
No.
Just keep saying no over and over and over again.
No flooding.
It's so interesting. Aren't we interesting?
Yes.
Yay.
You know, and there are some larger plants that you can use in, you know, erosion areas that have to do with high water, like hibiscus. Those do well.
Ooh.
Aren't those too tropical for here? No?
Not all. Like there's a Rose of Sharon is a hibiscus that likes a little bit on the drier side, but Confederate Rose is a hibiscus. The Moschuetos is a hibiscus that, you know, there's a lot of hardy ones for the area.
Oh, good. Good.
And you mentioned before carpeting type plants. What type of plants make I'd like to have a plant carpet. That sounds like a great idea.
Well, it sounds soft. I kind of want to lie on one.
You know, getting back to, a high sun area, the ice plant does a great carpet effect. But that is great. Like I love the ice plant as a ground carpet effect for a vegetable garden. And the reason being is because A, it doesn't compete with moisture for the vegetable plants. It's a drought tolerant succulent. So it's not going to require a lot of water.
So when you're watering your garden, it's okay that you're putting all that water in there because the vegetable or, you know, whatever you're putting in your garden is going to take up the water instead of the ice plant.
Right. And it's going to keep the heat of the sun off the soil because it's that barrier between the sun and the ground.
Brilliant.
Do you have ice plants at your nursery?
I try to keep them in stock. I use them a lot in projects, but I try to keep, propagating. I have in the stock gardens, there's about 9 stock gardens around the nursery, and I have them in there, and I take them out and propagate from them when I need them.
Where can we find you? I want to come to your nursery. How do I get there?
It's 1027 Plantation Road in Greer.
Awesome. And you've got a website, you've got a Facebook page, so check out Padula's Plants.
And Garden Design on Facebook.
That's right. Yeah. And that's Padula, P-A-D-U-L-A. Good stuff. Great stuff. They are a fabulous resource, and you will be hearing more from Andrew in future shows. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of the Saturday Splash.
Thanks for having me.
Here on 94.5 WGTK The Answer. We'll be back after this.